Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for December 1st. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me in cyberspace is Jim Allen. How are you doing this fine Sunday morning, Jim?
I'm doing well. Happy birthday, Mr. Gibson.
Don't remind me. Thank you.
Because it's not December 1st yet, while as we speak, so it's John Gibson is still young man.
No, don't remind me. Don't remind me. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it.
I just don't want to talk about it, so we're not going to talk about it. Anyway, I'm fine. Thank you. It's a beautiful Sunday morning here in Tokyo, and we have a lot of things to talk about today.
Yep. On this week's show, we've got a quick chat with Ben Zobrist of the Tampa Bay Rays, and we're going to discuss the MVPs and more.
In the calm and collected manner, which we're known for.
Exactly. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right. The trivia question this week is fairly easy. I expect you to get it within 10 seconds, so don't let me down.
Wow. Well, the pressure's mounting, so let me have it.
Who's the pitcher who leads NPB all-time in victories? And how many?
Oh, and how many?
It's a two-parter. Yeah, I have to get you back here at the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, it's over 300. And it's Masaichi Kaneta.
See, you got it within the 10-second range.
But as
I want the number.
Let's say 316.
No.
324.
More.
400?
Yes, exactly. 400 on the nose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird. Because I knew that. I knew that, or as a part of my sleep-battled brain knows that, but I don't think about it very much, obviously. Yes, okay.
Yeah, Masaichi Kaneda.
What made you dig that nugget out?
Because I looked at the all-time best nine list, which we're going to discuss later in the show, and I couldn't believe that he wasn't on it. So I was just amazed.
Well,
we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. All right. So you went out during your time covering the MLB and Japan games. You got to talk to someone. So why don't you tell us who you talked to?
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people, but the last person I spoke to was Ben Zobrist of the Tampa Bay Rays. And everybody was going, well, what did you ask him about Joe Madden? I'm going, no, because that's not really my field of interest, Joe Madden, as much as I love Joe Madden.
We all love Joe.
Barkeep. Favorite. Yeah. You know, I love managers who put on their Twitter feed, you know, the hoagies are ready. Let's go. So, no, I didn't ask about that, but the topic, of course, I asked what I call the Barry Bonds question. Now, the Barry Bonds question is, do you think these Japanese all-stars could compete at that time in the NL West? This question was asked in the year 2000 to Barry Bonds by a member of the Japanese media.
Yeah.
After a team of major league players played a team of Japanese players at Tokyo Dome.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, ha, no way. I mean, if we had the best team here, he didn't answer the question, of course. That would have been too easy.
Uh-huh.
He said, no way. I mean, if we had the best team here, I might not even be here. That year he was runner-up to Jeff Kent for the National League MVP.
Mm.
And so, no. They wouldn't be competitive in the NL West.
I thought the Barry Bonds question was about the size of his head and how it grew. But anyway.
Well, no, there were many questions about Barry Bonds and how he looks like he found a time machine, maybe, because he looks now, after spending all that time on the bicycle and riding races in California, he looks like the Barry Bonds of 1990.
Mm.
He's shrunk.
Yeah.
So, well, good for him. And I think he found his personality again, which was
found it or
well, I think what happened was,
reclaimed it.
No, I think there was a time capsule somewhere in the Bay Area dug up, and they found Barry Bonds' sense of humor.
Oh.
So he'd been missing it for 30 years. Okay.
Well, dust that thing off and let's plug it in.
See, so anyway, so the Barry Bonds question was, do you think these players, this Japanese team, given some time, as usual here, would be making it in the States? And that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear some real honest answers. And I'm okay with honesty. Barry, of course, when I asked him the same question 2 years later after Ichiro Suzuki was the MVP and American League Rookie of the Year, he said, I would never say Japanese players weren't good enough.
Of course.
Of course, because that would be politically incorrect. And right. Now I'm politically correct. And that was essentially, derailed on that one. Mm-hmm. And harassed on that one, actually. He had people from the Players Union come over and harass me.
Nice.
So anyway, so I asked Ben Zobrist that question, and we got onto the topic of the pitchers, and let's hear what he has to say.
Zobrist, I got a quick question for
yes.
you.
Yes, sir.
You give this Japanese team a year in MLB to get used to things and adapt. How well do you think they'd be able to compete, like in the AL East?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, nobody has any idea. I'm putting you out on a limb, so it's a tough question.
I don't like answering questions like that because these players they play a totally different season than us.
Sure.
They have a day off every
right.
week.
Absolutely. It's a tough adjustment.
It's a very tough adjustment to Major League Baseball because of how many games we play in how few days.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that's the total unknown. But as far as potential,
right.
they all could play in the Major Leagues.
Yeah.
As far as potential goes. But as far as a team goes,
yeah.
you never know how the pitchers will react to pitching as much as they would have to pitch in the Major Leagues.
Absolutely. In the middle infielders, it's a big adjustment from Japan to the Major Leagues.
Absolutely. It's been tough for a lot of position players.
Absolutely. You have to make all kinds of adjustments in your career, so obviously you know better than most, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, the other thing that I think is really tough in the Major Leagues is the travel. You know, it's much harder to travel and play as many games as we do in as little of time. So
sure.
they have pretty good travel in this league, and they have that one day off a week, I think, which would save a lot of injuries and effectiveness in the Major Leagues if we were able to do the same thing. I'm not so sure it's not a bad idea for the Major Leagues.
Now, the other question is, which of these pitchers do you think would make the best transition to the States that you face?
Well, I mean, some of the relievers, I think, are ready right now. You know, I mean, obviously all these guys could do the reliever thing.
Right.
They could all do the reliever thing pretty easily. I'm not really sure about
starting
pitchers, you know. It just depends on how many pitches they normally have to pitch in a certain amount of time. So, for me, I think the certain relievers that are ready are those guys that, you know, that sidearm guy. I mean,
sure, Mike.
He certainly could, you know, has good enough stuff and was able to throw strikes with it that he would be an easy choice for a guy that would, I think, make a good transition to the major leagues for a reliever. But I mean, some of these other guys, you have to see how often they can throw as hard as they're throwing and as many off-speed pitches as they're throwing. But I think they all, for sure, they all have the potential to do that.
Just whether they can or not is another question.
Right, exactly.
All right, thanks much.
Well, thank you, Ben Zobrist. Well, I hope you're listening.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. I hope I meet you someday.
he was very pleasant. It was we had a good time. Well, I had a good time. I was spending probably as much time with the Japanese guys as the major leaguers, but met a lot of interesting people. And the thing, well, what did you get out of the interview? And then I'll talk about what I think.
Okay. Well, first I have to say, and it's because I like Evan Longoria, but I'm a closet Rays fan, so. The fact that you got to talk to a diverse player like Ben Zobrist has me really jealous. But I always think of that type of player, a Ben Zobrist, as perhaps maybe the kind of player that Japan should seek out and try to bring here to play. You know, just hearing him talk, he's such a cerebral player, and you could tell. And, you know, I don't think that was Japan's best team that they were going up against.
No.
I think, you know, obviously with no...
It was a good team, though.
It was a good team. You know, there was no Iwakuma, there was no Makun, no Masahiro Tanaka.
Well, it was an MPB team, too, because they were all people playing in MPB. So
right, but I mean, if they were going
leagues.
Up against strictly Japanese guys, you know, I don't think that was the best team that Japan could have could have fielded. I think there was some, there's some talent still out there, but I really like the question, and I was going to ask you how you came up with it, but you already discussed that.
Okay, sorry, I gave the plot away.
So a couple of things that really stood out. I mean, you can just hear how cerebral a guy he is, and just his approach to answering the questions.
I couldn't hear that at the time because there were airplanes going over. I missed the brain, you know.
In the interview, if you listen to it, yeah, and he approaches things from an analytical side. I mean, you can see, and that I guess almost as much as what he had to say, it was the things that he didn't say that left a similar impression on me. And normally, when you talk about Japan and what these guys can do, normally they talk about form, mechanics, strength, size, strategy, and all the bunting and all that stuff. And he didn't mention any of that, starting with the size and the strategy with all the bunting that they do. He didn't go that way at all, which tells me it's not as much of an issue as it used to be. At least, you know, when he evaluated, when he went up against the players and when he saw them.
Right. Well, I think there were a couple of game changers in there. And of course, the other game changer is that they lost the series.
Well, that changes a lot, and they lost the first three.
Right, yeah. And they ended up losing four of the six they played against the Japanese national team.
Right.
So yeah, but that was interesting. And the other thing was, although Yuki Nagita is not a big player, he plays like a big player.
Hmm. Got a big swing.
Right. He's about 180, I want to say 185, 187 centimeters in that range.
6'1", 6'1 and a half. Yeah.
Six, not even. Yeah. 5'11". But he's got great bat speed and he takes big swings. So people say, yeah, he's a big guy, but of course, on the other hand, there were, you know, he was the same size as most of the major leaguers who were there, other than, you know, the big first baseman. You know, Justin Morneau's big, and Chris Carter's fairly big.
Chris Carter's a monster, yeah.
Well, you know, he's powerful, not as opposed to tall, but Carlos Santana also, and Robinson Cano's pretty big. So some of the big boppers there are sizable. And there aren't any of those guys in Japan. But as far as, yeah, not little guys. I mean, they didn't bring a team of Norihiro Akahoshis.
Right. Right. And then the other thing was, I couldn't decide if he didn't want to try and butcher some of the pronunciations of the pitchers' names that he was facing, or if he just didn't know the names. But while he was artfully dodging the question at the beginning, I could almost hear the wheels turning in his head. And he ended up referring to Makita as the sidewinder guy. So I think it was more like they just weren't sure the names of the guys they were facing.
Well, of course, with a lot of guys you're facing, I mean, they were facing a lot of different guys.
Certainly, yeah.
Right. It would be like, okay, well, which one was Iwata and which one was Eno and which one was Makita? Well, Makita's the one you would remember, I guess.
Right, definitely.
And he was and he was one of the guys who threw in the no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He was the old guy. He was three 24-year-olds and one 29-year-old.
Yeah, he's the older guy. But, you know, I just don't think the U.S. team was so concerned about that kind of preparation for this thing, you know, knowing the guys they faced. I don't think that was so important. They just wanted to know what kind of pitches they were facing, and that's the idea I got. And they just wanted to say, okay, this is the guy who throws this and that. And
yeah.
But they weren't really concerned about the names. But I bet you the Samurai players could name every pitcher they face because that's how they prepare. And I think that preparation, like I said in the last show, is the reason why Japan did so well in this thing.
Well, I think that is one thing, and of course, Jason did a story, I guess it was an opinion piece about the different goals that went into the Samurai Japan. You know, the majors basically just wanted to have a team here.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan wants to, get some work done. And you could see they are getting some work done, and you could see that there was a process here for the first time ever. So it was very interesting from that respect, and the nature of the team was basically a few guys, a few older guys who will help keep us competitive, who we think are the best players in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of young guys who we think will be ready for 2017.
Right.
At the next World Baseball Classic. So that was the nature of the team. And then, you know, one could argue with that and the fact that it was mostly Pacific League guys, and about a third of the Pacific League guys were from the Hawks.
Right.
Kokubo's former team.
Right.
Which at first I'm thinking, but, you know, it was a good team. I mean, I ain't got a problem. We'll get to this a little bit later, but it's not a problem for me if, you know, they're picking 28 guys and 15 or 17 or 18 of them are from the Pacific League, because that's the way the cookie crumbles right now.
Right, right.
What interested me, of course, as I said, was the bit about the adjustments, because for me this is the big issue, and I spent a lot of time talking about this with Mike Maddox, who was in the last interview, the following day, talking about the adjustments. And when I told him that starting pitchers could go home, you know, after you know, if they weren't on the 25-man list.
Mm-hmm.
They could go home. They didn't have to sit on the bench and support their teammates. Most of, you know, they couldn't sit on the bench and support. They'd have to either, you know, be off the bench somewhere.
Right.
Because Japan uses a 28-man roster, and then 25 of those guys are active for the game.
Right.
And the other three guys are not permitted to be around like they are in MLB.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you have guys on the – on the DA, you have guys on the farm team sitting on the bench in MLB. Nobody cares. But in Japan, they make a big deal about the guys on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway, I told Mike Maddox, and he's thinking, I saw this look in his eye like, I might make her come back and come to Japan and pitch.
Yeah, I get to go home?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, can watch the game on TV?
Randy Messenger, you know, told us that, and I'm going like, he says, oh, yeah, it's way easier.
Yeah.
And Kuroda told me the same thing. He said, you know, for him, that was a surprise. Of course, the five-man rotation. And I had a number of people say the five-day rest. And he says, I'm not certain MLB shouldn't find a way to do this.
Yeah.
And I think it was so interesting this year. You know, after spending a life in Japan where everything has been, what they do in MLB is crazy because it's a difference from the major leagues.
Right.
Right? So we get that. We get that pretty much, it used to be on a daily basis. To now, people in MLB not knowing that they're doing this in Japan,
mm-hmm.
so often, saying, you know, this is something we ought to think about. Maybe
yeah.
this is the best way to go. And what are they talking about? They're talking about, well, let's see, being able to bunt, and they're talking about having pitchers work on 5 or 6 days rest, and they're talking about staggering the playoffs to give more weight to the, you know, to the pennant winners, and
yeah.
I feel like I woke up on, you know, on a different planet.
Yeah, well, I have no qualms about bringing up the fact that we said on this show early on, and then Darvish followed up by saying maybe Japan has it right with the pitchers and the rest, and then you know Zobrist was about to talk about perhaps a 6-man rotation or some, he was about to expound on the aspect of maybe fewer games or something, but you broke in with your next question and you cut him off, and we never got to really hear what he was going to say about it, but he did bring that up. You gave him the John treatment.
I interrupt other people besides you. Don't feel like I'm singling you out for special treatment, Gibson.
Oh, okay. Jeez, I thought it was a John treatment.
We gotta rename it then. I love you, but I gotta make other people suffer as well.
But the numbers games in the month and the travel, the games that the number of games that they play in a month and the travel, you know, all that's an important factor. And I'm sure he has seen and read about it. And it seems like more people know more about Japanese baseball these days. But I think that's another reason for them to kind of look down on the league and think that, these guys are going to have a lot of trouble if they go over and try to play every day or pitch on 4 days rest and travel the way they travel, because they've seen it now.
Well, on the other hand, this is sort of like a playing first base question.
In that
we often get, you know, whenever somebody converts from another position to first base, particularly the outfield or, you know, third base, I guess are the most common, there'll be an old first baseman who says, you know, Sonny, it ain't that easy to play first base. You gotta know where to do with your feet. You gotta see the infield from a different position. It's hard. It's a hard. What he means is it's hard if you're like the guy you're speaking to on the radio and not a professional athlete.
Right.
who's not trying to, you know, do 100 other things. It is hard because it's a different challenge, but it's a learnable challenge generally.
Coco Ballantyne.
That most, I would say it's something that 99% of all professional baseball players could do.
Coco Ballantyne.
Could do, given time and effort.
Right.
There are a few who just, even first base is too big a challenge. But those people are pretty rare. You know, it's not like we're picking Uncle Joe out of the living room and asking him to play first base for the Baltimore Orioles. It's not like, you know, presidents whose names begin with Z on Jeopardy, you know. This is something most people can do. So the adjustment to the States is not something that Japanese players can't do.
Right.
However, it's something that they need to do, and it's definitely not easy, and it's definitely like the transition to first base, something that there's time pressure on.
Right.
You know, we need you to be good now.
Right.
I'm sorry, we paid you $40 million. We need you to be good yesterday.
Yesterday or last week. Well, the thing is, and I probably because Ben wasn't sure exactly what you were going to ask him, I think he kind of missed the first part of your question when you said, give them a year, give this team a year. And then he also missed the part about the AL East. I just think, and I think he was, obviously
well,
he didn't want to answer.
Well, he forgot that the AL East used to be competitive. Which would last year would have, you know, given a lot of people amnesia.
Smack. But anyway. Anyway, I think he missed that part of the question.
You gotta love that.
I have to love what?
The NL East, the AL East was the dog's dinner last year.
yeah. With the Yankees were pretty bad. Boston didn't play well.
They were going, man, Toronto they look pretty good in April. But anyway, so let's stop digging on, you know, a little payback for the AL East.
Okay. But, I think he made some really good points. And we saw a little tiny sample in this series of what the players on both sides could do. I think the big league coaches and the players, they prepare much differently for a season than they do for a series like that, and they thoroughly analyze strengths and weaknesses. And I think we didn't get a real good idea how that would play out in a major league season. But
of course,
but it's certainly fun to dream. It was nice to think about.
Well, yes, and Robinson Cano in his final interview, I thought this was going to be an exclusive interview. I tried to get it the day before. It didn't work out, and they set it up, and Robinson Cano is coming over here. Now, fortunately, what happened was he broke his toe the day I wasn't able to interview him, and then they said, okay, he'll come and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there over on the sidelines. So I'm waiting there over on the sidelines, and all of a sudden – all of the Japanese media is there with me in my exclusive interview.
Mm.
Anyway, he said something like, I said, wouldn't you, you know, you've just lost 3 games against these guys. Wouldn't you like to, you know, play them in a different context, like during the middle of the season when you're all, you know, into it? And he said, yeah, he said, you know, there's so many things that are different for us. And he said, one of the things was these guys aren't my regular teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that communication, that rhythm that you get by being with a group of people for 6 months or 5.5 months.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't have that. We don't have the ups and downs and knowing who's going to be where and when, and all that's missing. So it's not quite the same. But he said, you know, he said, of course it's fun and these guys can play and we're having a blast. And
yeah, I'd like to play during the season, except I don't want to get hit by a wild Nishi pitch and get a broken toe.
Yes, indeed. Well, that was the thing. And he got the, of course, he got to see a Japanese hospital as well, so he got the extra cultural treatment. Anyway, yeah, I want to thank, you know, I appreciate so much for the guys who did stop and talk and share their time. Who Evan Longoria was not one of them, but we got to cut him some slack. His he had a baby born on the tour.
Right.
And one day he said, okay, two questions, and he ended up answering three, but those, I think, were the only three questions he answered after the child was born.
Right, right.
The rest of the time he'd be off the phone texting, I assume, to his wife. And
well, he wasn't texting the baby, so.
He might have been, you know. Well, who knows? Might be a genius baby or something.
Well, we really appreciate you getting that interview for the show.
It was really
awesome. Like I said, just a quick chat, but really hard hitting, a lot of interesting facts in there.
Well, he was good. He was a star there. And so that proves they did bring some stars.
Love me some Zobie. Yeah, I like that whole team. All right. All right, moving along to the MVPs. And of course, on the notes, I typed it in wrong. I guess I was so disgusted that I couldn't even type it in wrong and I correctly, and I put MPVs, which I guess is most personal value or something like that, because I don't know.
I'm just warming up over here. I'm just the gears are just starting.
You're squirming.
It's like 0430 here, it feels like. I feel like it's Monty Python time. It's 3 hours before I went to bed.
Okay, so yeah, Tomoyuki Sugano of the Yomiuri Giants was the MVP in the Central League, and Chihiro Kaneko, the ace and all everything pitcher for the Oryx Buffaloes, was the MVP in the Pacific League. Mm-hmm. Now, it happens every year, and I don't know, without fail, we have some travesty or some major failure that goes on. I don't know that this is a major failure. It was just weird to me. It was weird that they would pick a guy who missed so much of the season for the Central League and a guy who didn't have his career year in the Pacific League when there were other guys in both leagues who were probably more deserving and more credible MVPs.
Not his career year. It was his career year.
I think numbers wise he had a better season last year. It just got overshadowed by Masahiro Tanaka. But I mean,
yes and no. They were pretty much, yeah. Well, the big difference between this year and last year was the complete games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he went from 10 to 2 or 10 to 3 or something. But yeah, I mean, there were similar seasons. I think this year and last year were just bookends. So I'm okay with that.
All right. Well, still, I don't know that it was MVP worthy though, but go ahead.
No, I'm saying, well, yeah, okay. We'll see. Go ahead. So go on, rant.
Well, I'm just tired. My rant is more about the focus of these people being held accountable. I mean, more and more, the world is starting to look at Japanese baseball.
Mm.
It's growing. It's growing in popularity. The players who are moving over to the States generate more interest. And there's a lot of scouts who come over and a lot of people who know, and they see, and they know who they would, right, I guess, assume is MVP worthy, and they know who's contributing to whether it's value on the field or value as a personal, as an individual player. However you want to deem value, these guys who are scouts can say, hey, look, you know, the guy who's really driving this team is A, or the guy who's got the potential to be a major league player is B, or this guy can come over and play in the United States and be a big contributor, and we can see it. And those are not the guys who are winning the MVP awards. It's just, I mean, Sugano is just a figurehead, and you know, he's nothing but a figurehead. He's a puppet. He's a puppet. I mean, he's not an MVP. And this thing, it's making the award, it's making the league look rinky-dink, and it's making the award, the MVP award, empty. It's useless. It's meaningless.
That's a good brand.
Your turn, sir.
Well, I have a couple of things to say. First of all, it's harsh calling him a figurehead. I never thought of him as, I would think Abe is more of a figurehead right now, in the sense that he's sort of the face of the Giants or Sakamoto. But
I think with this season, I think it's changing.
Well, what I would say, first of all, you know, one of the, as far as experience with, as you're referring to the foreign version of what Japan baseball is, I basically, my backup video for the All-Star Series while I was at the ballpark was MLB.com. And I listened to their announcers. And I was very impressed that they really worked hard on this series, the guys. I mean, they butchered names here and there, and well, what do you expect? I butcher major league names for guys I'd never hear.
Yeah.
So, we had Keisuke Kano and Robinson Kano, and we were wondering if they were related or something. So,
right.
But you know, that's normal. The more I listened to these guys, the more I realized they did their homework. They did their best to present a very even picture of Japanese baseball. And yeah, more power to these guys. I wish I could remember their names.
Paul Severino was the main announcer.
Okay, and did a great job. But of course, they're misled by MVP votes. They kept saying, well, Uchikawa is, you know, he's the big player. He's won the MVP. He's been the Japan Series MVP. And we're like going, well, yeah. Well, so was, well, Yoshihito Ito was a Climax Series MVP because he got one hit.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Oh, you mean Yoshihito?
Yoshihito Ishii.
Ishii, yes.
Ishii was the MVP of the Climax Series in 2012.
Yeah, okay.
Because he got one hit. He got a pinch hit that ended an extra inning game that kept the Giants in the Climax Series, allowed him to go to the Japan Series and win. So,
right.
You know, weird things happen in Japan, definitely. Anyway, so speaking of MVPs as we are, I mean, I wasn't trying to analyze why these people got voted, but it kind of hit me like a brick last night, and unfortunately didn't leave a mark.
That's the best kind.
Like the one it did obviously left on you. So, what occurred to me was, as I sat down, I was going to make a case for my MVP candidates, the people I voted for, and I've been doing this all week with Steve from Chiba.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much I was warned by Twitter to calm down.
Twitter sent you a tweet, huh?
They did indeed. They sent me a warning, you know. They said, we don't care if you talk about evolution or not, but calm down on the MVP stuff.
Nice.
Anyway, I was thinking about my MVPs I voted for were Takashi Toritani of Hanshin.
Yeah.
And Yuki Inagita of the Hawks. And Steve and I were arguing about the merits he was arguing about the demerits of Inagita compared to Yoshio Itoi, which I'm not going to get into, but basically it gets into a very complex analytical issue, which I don't want to bore any of you with. So anyway, to get onto the thing, as I was kind of thinking, well, these aren't the guys who are my MVPs. My MVPs are this guy, these guys, and for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It suddenly occurred to me, what happened with this year's vote was, we had, what we lacked was what we had last year in the Central League, which we had guys with big numbers.
Right.
We had two guys with really big seasons last year in the Central League, who was Shinosuke Abe and Vladimir Valentin.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked Valentin because it was sort of like a release valve. Oh, we get to vote for the guy with the big numbers this year, so let's vote for the guy with the big numbers without really asking the question, is he the most valuable player?
Right.
Okay, so that's my rant on that one. But the point is, if you don't have a guy who has big numbers, you know, I think actually at first my first thought was they just picked these guys out of a hat. They didn't spend any time thinking about it, and I think there's that element to it. But what occurred to me was this. the Giants won the pennant, which is, of course, the number one. Not the Giants winning the pennant, but the team winning the pennant.
Right, I get you.
The one criteria. Now, the Hawks won the pennant, but, of course, they weren't. And I wouldn't, if it was a Central League, it wouldn't matter. I shouldn't say it wouldn't matter by it, whether they won just by winning percentage points. I mean, after all, in 1974, which is, you know, back in the day, the Giants lost the pennant, but the MVP was a Giant because, and I think part of that was because they lost the pennant by winning percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
They won more games than the Chinichi Dragons, who had tied more and lost like two fewer,
mm-hmm.
but won, you know, won one fewer, but lost two fewer.
Right.
So, Sadaharu Oh was the MVP that year. And this is sort of a case of what happened with the Buffaloes and the Hawks. The Hawks won the winning, won on, by the slimmest of margins. And they named a Buffalo the MVP. I'm okay with that. That's sort of in form. But what the reason I mentioned the Giants is because the story about the Giants was no hitting, all pitching.
This year?
Yeah. All pitching and defense, no offense.
Hmm.
Am I incorrect in that respect?
I just think they had more balance. I don't think it was either or. I think it was they
were definitely when you lead the league in ERA by a fairly good margin at Tokyo Dome. I think it's pretty obvious that your pitching and defense is good.
Yeah, I just don't think
I don't think it was that big a deal. I mean, Tokyo Dome is not Jingu or Yokohama or like that, but my point being that everybody knows it's a big home run park, and of course what the Giants didn't do is they didn't hit for average.
Okay.
And they didn't score runs.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so the point being that the pitching and defense was the big thing for the Giants. So basically there was nobody with eye popping numbers. Right.
Right.
So I think they went and said, when the Giants won with pitching, so let's pick their best pitcher. And Sugano was their best pitcher. Whether or not he missed, he was their most productive pitcher. Whether or not he missed a month or not is irrelevant. I mean, he was their most productive pitcher. You would be really hard to argue anybody else.
I don't have any doubt that he was. In fact, I applaud guys like Claudio and Anthony Pang on the homepage, who said, when I asked the question, who are they going to pinhole from the Giants into this MVP award, they immediately said Sugano. And I thought,
yeah.
And that was before he got hurt and missed, I think, the last 6 weeks or, you know, month plus of the season. But, yeah, I have no problem with the fact that he's the best
player. Well, anyway, to get to the having set that up, what happens is this. The voters, what's our every month we have this rant about the player of the month that is actually the hitter of the month. And it doesn't, you know, if you're two ticks below on the ballot, but you're a gold glover and the guy who's got more RBIs than you is a DH, the DH is going to win the player of the month because nobody cares about defense. So here what they looking at is the Giants pitching in defense and then forgetting about the fielders and forgetting that there's like, okay. Anyway, by my calculations, the Giants pitching and defense, which was the best in Japan last year as a unit,
mm-hmm.
Sugano's share of that was about 11%.
Okay. Yeah.
And he did nothing else. He did nothing else. I mean, Sakamoto's share, by my analysis, is close to 5% for mm-hmm. playing shortstop every day.
Right.
Plus, so that's all given to the pitchers. In the vote, everything the fielders do goes to the pitcher's credit,
mm-hmm.
and none of it goes to the batter's credit. So if you don't have a guy with eye-popping numbers, in my opinion, the Giants MVP was Sakamoto. In my, same thing happened in the Pacific League. They took the team with the big pitching and defense. They forgot about the fielders and they gave it all to the pitcher.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I looked at the voting, and Tetsuto Yamada was second in the Central League, and I guess because he broke this record for right-handed Japanese players, that made him a star. But I thought Maru Gomez and Matt Merton and Yosuke Kikuchi, I thought they were all better and deserved more than what did they get? One of them got, Merton got 6 first place votes, and Kikuchi got 2, and Gomez got 2, and I'm thinking, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, Randy Messenger.
That's not ridiculous. That's not ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I just think Randy Messenger, who is probably
high on the list of candidates,
he got 9 first place votes, and I maybe, of course, we never agree about what he deserved 9. I don't know that he deserved 9 either. I would have given votes to the other guys, the position players who played every day, and it's not because they played every day and because they were out there every day, and as opposed to being a starting pitcher who's out there once a week. It's just that they had good seasons. They were very steady, and they played almost every game. And you know, that's a big deal, being reliable.
Okay, well, I had Yamada pretty high up. I gave Yamada 3rd place, so Morrow got 2nd, but the two were really close. Morrow had a tremendous offensive year, but in a sense, and the way I do my analysis, Morrow is held back essentially because the Carp had a lot of runs. The Carp had a good offense, but it didn't lead to a lot of wins.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a handicap for that when, you know, you can only give credit for wins when the team actually wins.
That helps, yeah.
So he has to share his great numbers with a little more. And then you get to Toritani playing on the team with the best offense in Japan last year, the Tigers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which people don't realize.
You're waiting for me to respond, but I mean, I remember what you said about the runs at Jingu not counting as much as runs at...
Yeah, they're not as valuable.
I know what you're saying.
Basically, Jingu increases runs by about 7%, and playing in Koshien with your main park decreases them about 6%.
Right.
And when you look at the numbers they scored, the Tigers scored a phenomenal number of runs, and they did, I think here's the thing. It had the Tigers led the league in runs scored by a good margin, people would have said, wow, they did that at Koshien. But instead we got, wow, the Giants led the league in ERA and they didn't hit. So they're pitching in defense and they won the league. But it was a weird league anyway. So so that happened. But, yeah, I think having looked at that, Morrow had a great season, as Steve from Chiba said. Yoshui Choi was his MVP. Mine was Yanagita, but they were very close. Yanagita, definitely, Itoi had better numbers, but again, they were made in different contexts. Yeah. Yanagita had a bigger part of a better offense. Actually had a smaller part of a much better offense.
Yeah, Yanagita was the man for me in the Pacific League, but the thing that I didn't really understand in the voting was a guy like Ryota Igarashi of the Hawks getting 17 first place votes, and that's 14 more than Itoi. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why? And, you know, the guy the guy I thought they were going to make the MVP, Seiichi Uchikawa, only got 10 first place votes. But then, you know, as you go down the list, you're trying to figure out why Kenji Otonari got a vote, a first place vote, the only vote he got, for playing a fourth of a season, sort of.
He played about a third.
He made 9. I had him for nine starts.
Right, which is not a fourth in Japan. 9 starts is a third in Japan.
All right.
Most starters start about 26 games. And he, of course, when he came back, which was halfway through, a little after the halfway mark, it was prior to the All-Star game. And then for the first 3 starts, they were starting him on 10, 11 days rest. So he missed a couple of starts there. So,
ridiculous. I mean, yeah, it's the voting that I don't understand. So,
I can understand the flawed logic. Like, I can understand the flawed logic that goes into voting Kaneko and Sugano. With Otonari, we've got a guy who's sort of like the Hawks rotation was like going nowhere, and all of a sudden this guy's coming up and he's wailing, and he came out of nowhere, and it was sort of like, oh, he's the one who's, you know, they were looking for the savior. There's the savior. Who is better in the second half is a big thing in these kind of votes.
Yeah.
Because first of all, most of these guys can't remember the first half.
Well, I just think it's a whole different set of murky and mangled standards that they come up with an MVP.
Compared to the stupid stuff that comes up in the U.S., well, what happens in the U.S., however, is there's a debate. There's discussion about, see, this is what I miss. There's discussion in the U.S. about why people should be the MVP and why they shouldn't be the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you get this, oh, you're just a stathead and you're this and that. But there in Japan, it's like, no, he's the MVP. Shut up. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
Punch the clock.
Well, punch. Speaking of punch, people have to be held accountable. I just think they're just getting
away. Publish the votes like they do in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, make these people accountable, and then when they vote for Takahiro Suzuki of the Giants and give him an MVP vote, whether it's in first place. Yes! Yes, he got three first place votes.
Wow.
He got 40 points.
I'm with you.
Takahiro Suzuki, most of you people who are listening don't even know who this guy is. He's nothing. He's certainly not an MVP. I don't get it.
Three first place votes. Well, that's probably the thing. Well, the Giants had good defense, so let's pick a guy who can field. But I applaud for anybody thinking that the Giants defense was worthy of praise, because it certainly was. But I mean, I guess Hara hadn't made that little speech at the end of the season saying our defense was the best in team history, and I'm gagging.
Mm.
I guess they're traditionally bad then.
Anyway,
but that's a good point. Yeah, let's publish these guys' names. So, who got their only vote from me? Yang Daikon got his only vote in the voting from me. He got a third place vote.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, we got to make these guys accountable. It's like I said about.
We got to do that.
We've got to do it, and somebody, we've got to get help doing it. But the other thing is, you wonder why the major leagues look down on Japan, and this is probably.
I think that's pretty low on the list.
It's probably low on the list, but then when they say, "Hey, look, they don't even know what they're looking at," is basically.
Well, I see that every attitude. Time I read anything by Jerome Holtzman. What in the heck is this guy? What is he smoking?
Yeah, smoking. All right. Well, since we're on this kind of a roll here, let's talk about the all-time best nine and try to figure out. Well, I mean, it was easy. They published the all-time best nine at least this past week in the newspapers, and all they did was calculate per se. All they did is add up all the guys who were selected for the best nine at any given position the most times over the 80 years of pro baseball in Japan.
Yeah,
so,
and that, of course, what happened is people wrote about it like it was important, like this was news.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, and these guys have been retired for, who is the newest guy on those lists?
The newest guy on the list, Koji Yamamoto?
Yeah.
I guess Nagashima would have been the newest guy.
I saw him play after he retired in 1986 at Korakuen Stadium against a team of Major League All-Stars, and they got beat like 23-3.
Nice. Yeah.
Came on as a pinch hitter, so that tells you how new that list is.
Well, I obviously you didn't have to bring your brain to this party. It would just add everything up together. So I thought, the first thing I thought when I saw this all-time best nine, I thought, who's missing? That's why I looked up Masaichi Kaneda, because I thought, wait a minute, best show, I've heard some stuff about it, but not much. And I know you're more of a historian than I am, but so I looked up and I'm like, well, that's not that impressive. Somebody's got a lot of wins. Well, who's that guy? And I remember Kaneda, so I looked him up, and I saw the 400 wins, the 365 complete games, the 4,490 strikeouts, the 5,526 innings pitched. He's got 298 losses.
So what's missing from that? What's missing from that story? So your question is, how come he's not didn't win a bunch of best nines?
Yeah, exactly, because they didn't have the award, right?
No, they had the award from his rookie year. In fact, they had the best nine award before that, before the two leagues started.
Huh.
But what happened was he spent most of his career with the Kokutetsu Swallows, who were typically the last place team in the Central League. So what's missing here is we have one guy who's the ace of the Yomiuri Giants. Well, of course, I think the pitcher was, the guy who had the most best nines as a pitcher was like five times. Or four times, maybe. It doesn't have, pitchers don't win best nines. They flame out a lot.
Right.
But this guy was, you know, the big star pitcher for the Yomiuri Giants, for a few years and won it. And, Kaneda, when he was with the Yomiuri Giants, there were a bunch of other pitchers who were pretty good. And he was kind of a swing man. He was a very valuable player for them, but he was not the monster that he was when he was when he came into professional baseball as a 16-year-old.
Wow. Interesting stuff. And then I thought, Tsutomu Wakamatsu, I remember him being a really good hitter and a really,
sure.
And I thought he could have been on there, and I wondered why he wasn't there.
Well, again, he played for pretty much a lame team. He was also a Swallow. You know, what is this about the Swallows and bad teams before 1978? But, yeah. You know, this is awards. I mean, and of course, the other award is the Shōriki Award, which is, we'll get to in a second. But, you, it's not on your list, but we're going to get to it.
Oh, yeah.
So, he was not on a team that won.
Right.
So he was not the best nine very often. Although he did win a bit. Batting championship, and he won a Shōriki Award in 1978 as the Swallows star when they used to give it to players.
And then I wondered why Shigeo Nagashima won so many best nines, because I just figured there was somebody better. He's just so popular.
Well,
there had to be somebody better at third. He wasn't that great.
That's hard to say, because he was both. He was so popular that it erased all his, I mean, there are stories about Nagashima, you know, that he got away with murder when he was playing because he was Nagashima. I mean, it's famous, you know, he'd go to third base and he would ignore second base on the way back to first if the ball was caught or something.
Okay. Alright, well, it was interesting. It was an interesting list. I guess it just added to the disappointment of the MVP, but on a less significant level.
But as far as him being worthy of all of them, well, nobody was worthy of probably all of them.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen Ichiro on the list, but of course he didn't play here long enough to win all the best nines, so.
Yeah, he was, seven times and an outfielder. You know, Yamamoto's a weird one, but Fukumoto, who was also the outfielder in that group.
Right.
Just an amazing player. So.
All right, well, let's talk about player transactions then. Just quickly touch on that. Catcher Ryoji Aikawa is going to go from the Swallows to the Giants as a free agent. They tell him that he's going to be able to compete for the starting job, when we all know that Seiji Kobayashi is going to get that starting gig, and he's going to be
the main man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just talked about him the other day about how strong his throwing arm is. And he hit enough, I think, in a sample situation last season that I think they're comfortable. But, you know,
yeah, obviously
they need a backup, because they're not going to put – they're moving Abe to first base, and they're not really going to put him behind the plate, I don't think. So I think that move with Abe going to first is going to be as permanent. I think maybe we might see him in some emergency, maybe extra inning situations where they want to pinch hit or.
Oh, Abe?
Yeah, maybe he'll take over behind the plate.
Yeah, I wonder, because Aikawa is really a good catcher.
Yeah.
And I have to think that this is a case of, well, we've got a really good catcher and let's get him because our guy's too young. The guy we really want is not, we don't think he's ready, you know, I think that's the case. I don't know, maybe it's the pitching coach, it's probably the pitching coaches who want Aikawa, because the no catcher's ever ready for the pitchers, unless he's over 30.
Interesting.
So I'm guessing that the pitching guys want a better catcher who knows what he's doing, because they don't want their ERAs to look, you know, be up by a tenth of a run. Pitching, you know, while a young guy who is the future of the team produces. You know, they don't care about that. They care about their ERAs.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. And I, we have talked in the past about how pitchers are comfortable throwing to certain guys. So we'll see. I just get the idea that, and plus we had a story on it in our paper about the fact that they've really worked with this youngster, Kobayashi, and that he's always talking to the manager.
Carl will make that decision. And I suspect that it's probably a sort of a backup plan, like you said.
Yeah.
But I wonder. You know, I think there are people who don't trust anybody under 30.
Interesting. Okay. And then Yoshihisa Naruse, he's going from the Marines, and Keiji Obiki is going from the Fighters, both going to the Swallows via free agency. And then Eiichi Koyano from the Fighters to the Buffaloes. And then the biggest thing I thought was Matsuzaka-chan, I like to call him, Daisuke Matsuzaka, going to the, and this is not a done deal yet, but going to the SoftBank Hawks. And
yeah,
I guess that's good for him. We talked about some of the guys who probably would be better off coming back to Japan.
I couldn't really care less, to be honest. It's like, and I'll tell you why. I don't mean to be rude, but you know, most of the guys don't really want to come back. I'm surprised Matsuzaka is coming back, but we were talking about that in the office. Can he play in Japan? I think, yeah. But he can still play in the majors. And so my colleague, Shintaro Kano, was saying,
Kano,
coming back to SoftBank, why so early? You know, this is a kind of a thing. Coming back to Japan is usually like a late December decision. You know, no interest at the winter meetings. Okay, best offers from Japan. It's more like SoftBank said, you know, well, they call us SoftBank for a reason. Let's get some money.
Right.
Let's get some money and give Matsuzaka a big chunk of that.
Well, I mean, I don't think he's going to be like Kei Igawa or Masanori Takahashi. I don't think he's going to be that kind of pitcher. I think he's going to be more useful, but you know, I think we have to see what he's got left. I know he knows how to pitch to Japanese players.
Well, of course, he'll tell you his career is going to transform because nobody will complain when he wants to throw 400 pitch bullpens.
Exactly.
So the guy blamed everything that went wrong on him in the United States on not being able to throw 400 pitch bullpens.
Yeah. And then Chihiro Kaneko, we don't know exactly what he's going to do, but he's got elbow issues. He's going to have his elbow cleaned out. There's some cartilage issues he's got there. So I did see a story last night on Yahoo Japan about him leaning toward going back to the Buffaloes. So
I think that's most likely.
And I think you called that on our last show. So that was a good call.
The interesting one there was Osada Haruo said, you know, we'd love to have you, son, but if you want to come to SoftBank, you're going to have to shut up about this posting stuff.
Yeah, clamp those.
Because we don't, the Hawks are one of the two teams that when the majors said, let's limit the posting fees to 20 million, they said, 20 million? How about a dollar?
Yeah, it's about the same our eyes, yeah.
It'd be the same for us. We ain't posting nobody. The Giants are going, yeah, those commies. Let's get rid of them. So they were one of the teams that have no interest, that will not post players on a matter of principle.
Mm. Okay. And then it looks like Willie Mo Pena's stay in with the Oryx Buffaloes is done. He won't be invited back for a second year. And that whole situation.
Well, they wanted him back, but they couldn't agree. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was the report. I think I saw something about that. But that whole situation crash landed to me because in the playoffs.
At the end of the season.
Remember, he didn't play in the playoffs, and he was.
But he practiced. He was practicing the first day of the playoffs. He was taking BP.
Right, but he didn't get any swings against the
Nippon Ham. No, he didn't.
And then
he was sort of unavailable for the game, and they asked the manager, and he shrugged. He said, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
When the manager says, I don't know, it usually means we're having personal issues.
That's what I thought, and so that's what I think happened there. So we'll probably see him back in Japan, but with another team. And then,
I think it's just as likely he's going to go back to the majors. I'm hearing the Twins and the Royals are of some interest, which I think is a disaster. I think he's better suited to Japanese baseball, but that's the talk.
Interesting. Then you would say that. and I don't want to get into it, but you would say this guy should go to the majors, but you won't say these Japanese players should come back to Japan.
No, I didn't say he should. I said he should stay in Japan.
That's what I said.
Oh, okay, okay. Do I think they should stay in, shouldn't come back to Japan? No, I said I don't care whether they come back to Japan or not. That's different.
Okay. All right.
I think most of these guys are going to stay in the majors if they think they can play in the majors. Matsuzaka certainly could help a few teams in the majors, but I think what happened in that case was the Hawks flushed that with a big offer.
Yeah.
So it came back. Nobody else was getting that.
Okay.
So,
former Yakult Swallows star Akinori Iwamura is going to be a player manager with an indie league team, a new team that's going to be a newly created team called the Fukushima Hopes of the BC League. And so my little headline the other day is that Iwamura is going to be raising hopes in Fukushima.
Oh, very good. That's good on so many levels.
Yeah, so I don't remember him being the nurturing type, so perhaps there's a deeper relationship with this team than we know on the surface. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I thought
I don't know, but he's always told me this, his dream is, you know, he felt like, you know, he got to go to play to the major leagues because of what Japanese baseball gave him.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels obligated to give back.
Interesting. Well, I mean, again, I'm just tired of pitchers and catchers exclusively, or it just seems that way. I know it's not the case, but there's so many managers who come from the pitching school or the catching school here in Japan that it's refreshing to get a guy who was an infielder, who's going to be a manager. And maybe they can – I thought a great idea was for him to call – teammate or former teammate Alex Ramirez and have him be a coach with him on the team, maybe be his bench coach. And that would get Alex his start on the bench and get him a boost toward being where he wants to be, which is in the big chair as a manager. And it would also relieve some stress. And actually, you have two good, one from the left side, one from the right side, hitting technicians on a team that can really help some of these young players. And maybe there's a little budding star out there they can help develop. So I thought that would be a good idea.
Well, the independent league's kind of interesting. I mean, Japanese baseball has really opened up, and I don't know why, but we've got a case of the head coach from the Fighters is basically a former high school. He's a former pro player who coached in high school ball.
Mm-hmm.
We've got guys that, independent leagues are full of former pros as coaches, and some of those guys are sort of, I think a few of those guys are getting back. Of course, the drafts are full of independent league guys now. So, yeah, interesting. That's an interesting idea that had not occurred to me, but okay.
Okay. And then one other note, the candidates for the Hall of Fame were announced, and Satoru Komiyama, mm-hmm, from the Lotte Marines, and Kazuyoshi Tatsunami are among the new players on the list, including Tuffy Rhodes. There are nine new names that were on the list. And so we'll see how that voting goes, obviously. But I'm hoping – you said that before we started taping that you didn't see either of any of these three guys being –
No, Tatsunami is a Hall of Famer, yeah.
But not on the first –
Probably not. But he's going to get in probably, you know, like he could be a first year. He was a big player. Kanemoto will be a big player when he comes along in a few years. But foreigners have done very badly in the Hall of Fame voting.
Yeah.
The only foreign-born player was voted in the Hall of Fame. I think even he was voted in by the experts, which is sort of the Veterans Committee kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wally Yonamine.
Yeah.
Not talking about those other people who were, you know, ancient guys they dug up for the purposes of putting them in the Hall of Fame. But anyway, what I wanted to mention about the Shoriki Award is applicable to Tuffy Rhodes.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this whole thing, and I think they're linked, the Shoriki Award is a Yomiuri Award, like the Sawamura Award, and it tends to be a little conservative. Now, it started out as an award. They made the award. The Yomiuri made this award to honor Sadaharu Oh's breaking Hank Aaron's home run total.
Mm-hmm.
When Sadaharu Oh's record exceeded the record of Hank Aaron's, they made this award for him. And they gave it to players. It's supposed to be for players, for the person who contributes the most to professional baseball. Coach, umpire, front office guy, player, or manager? Okay, so basically, managers won and players won. Managers won, players won. And in 2000, the last player who won it was Hideki Matsui. Now, the next year, because he hit 50 home runs.
Right.
Okay, he was MVP. Okay, fine, great. And players used to win it fairly regularly at that stage. Most of the winners were players. Ichiro won it once. Ichiro shared it with Nagashima, blah, 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 blah. Then comes 2001, and we have this tremendous season. We have the Pacific League MVP, 55 home runs, ties O's career record.
Right.
Ah, it's Tuffy Rhodes. Let's stop giving it to players. So they named Stomu Wakamatsu, the very, I think, underrated manager of the Yakult Swallows, who happened to beat the Kintetsu Buffaloes in the Japan Series. And now we have the routine of, unless there's some reason we have to give it to somebody else, we're going to give it to the Japan Series manager or managers. Sanichi Hoshino.
Right.
So because of Tuffy Rhodes, and I'm going to say part of it is because Tuffy Rhodes is black, and partly, which is not a big deal in Japan as much as it is in the States, or used to be in the States. I can't speak for race relations very accurately, not living there.
Yeah, neither can I, actually.
So partly, maybe that's a small thing. And there's also the bit about probably at that time Tuffy had been involved in one teensy-eensy, you know, his name, his picture, while he was married, his picture appeared in a weekly photo magazine with someone, with a woman who wasn't his wife.
Right.
But that did happen. And I think, you know, just those two things, foreigner.
Right.
Whiff of maybe some kind of scandal that would never happen to these Japanese players.
Never, 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 never.
Yeah, which will definitely raise its head when Tatsunami isn't voted in his Hall of Fame on the first ballot, because he's a guy who had more issues than Tuffy Rhodes had in his life.
He had as many issues as he did. Well, never mind.
Anyway, yeah, we're not going to talk to his.
I was going to say doubles, but.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, probably. No, I don't think he set the record for issues. But he did set the record for doubles. So, okay, and then, so we've got, he's a foreigner, he's black, he had some issue, and no, let's give it to managers. Players are too much trouble.
Yeah.
So we have not had a player win it since.
Yeah, and it's an interesting award. I don't really get it. thank you for giving us the background on it, but I don't know what it does. It doesn't do anything. You know, it's one of these honors.
It gives up some cash. I think it's like 3 million yen they get.
Yeah, but what does it do for us? You know, what does Brown do for you is what the commercial says in the States, and I just don't see anything. It doesn't do anything. I'm not. Get excited
Brown,
about it.
Terry Brown?
No. it doesn't do, you know, I don't watch it. I don't wait for it. There's no anticipation. But you know what? It's better than the MVPs.
Well,
it doesn't frustrate me.
Well, they have a clear, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Let's not knock John because he might rant on us.
These people need to be held accountable. Shoot them. Shoot them. Line them up and shoot them all.
John's doing his Peter Finch impression here. He's leaning out the window and he's got everybody screaming in the streets of Tokyo right now.
All right. Well, that just means we need to go.
I think probably that's
all right. Thanks a lot for listening. Send your rants or your raves to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, probably. And hopefully we'll have another great interview. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Enjoy your off season.
Bye-bye.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.